We're back to the Neil Haley Show here on the Caregiver Dave Celebrity Segment. I'm excited to welcome to the program Caregiver Dave and Sandy. Dave, how are you?
Hey, I'm awesome. How are you?
Good. Were you ever a drummer? I just, you know, you're
yes,
a senior.
Yes, I was a drummer, started at 12 and into my teen years. And then when I got married, I had to sell my drums and sad, sad day.
Yeah, but Dave, and you went viral in music too, right? You know, sure. I never told that story on our TV show. Maybe on the radio you did. Tell that story before you introduce our guest.
Tell that story?
Yeah, the viral, going viral music.
I'm not sure which story you're talking about, Neil.
Remember when you went viral music? Oh, Dave, you're forgetting. Well, I'll bring it up later. All right, so introduce our guest.
Hedy Brunetti. She describes herself as a sober Janis Joplin meeting a Steely Dan in Memphis. And it wasn't long before Teddy was touring with New York City's Impalas and Toronto's infamous B-Girls, performing with Iris's Carol McDonald before finally launching her own solo career. Welcome to the show, Teddy.
Hey, thank you. It's an honor to be with you guys today.
Yeah, you look great.
Absolutely. And let's go real quick, Teddy. One of the questions I wanted to ask you is drumming. Now, thinking about it, drummers are different because they can be in different bands a lot more than taking on another spot, right? You can be because it's hard to find a great drummer, isn't it, Teddy?
Well, there's lots of great drummers, but to me, the band's only as good as the drummer, you know, especially in pop music, you know, rock and roll, today's kind of music that's popular music. The beat's the whole thing, isn't it now?
It's hard to find a good drummer who can also sing, other than Karen Carpenter.
You have to separate your brain a little bit. Mm-hmm.
So how did it start, Teddy, like getting involved in drums? How old were you?
You know, the drums chose me. I didn't choose the drums. It was just like this spiritual experience I had when I was about 11 years old. I was at a girlfriend's birthday party, and her older sister, who must have been like 14 or 15, had a little Victrola record player, and they put this 45 on. It was the Kingsman, Louie Louie. And I heard the drums on that song are bombastic. And it shot through me like a bolt of lightning, and I was possessed, and I ran to that record player, and I kept playing that song over and over again. And I had never played a musical instrument, you know, it was like 11. And so, but I knew in those moments that's what I did. That's what I was going to do. That's what I did. I was a drummer. This is what I do. I'm a drummer. I'm a musician. I'm a, you know, singer. I'm all this stuff. You know what I mean? It just came on me. I mean, I don't know how to describe it. It was just like this magic thing that happened. And I ran home after that party and asked to have drum lessons because I had a younger brother who was like a child prodigy, classical pianist. All right. And he's a big vocal coach in Manhattan today. He went to Carnegie Mellon for piano. And his name's David Brunetti. He's written a book called, I'll plug him, Acting Songs. They use it as a textbook in colleges and theater groups and stuff. Yeah, he's very well known and has done quite well for himself. But anyway, I'm the oldest of 10 kids, by the way.
Oh,
so that might have been another reason why they didn't want me to play the drums.
You must be Italian.
So, but they said no when I asked for the drums because they thought it was a boy's instrument. So I asked for the next best thing, which to me was guitar. And that's my first instrument, guitar. And so it served me well because that's how I write today. There's not a lot of drummers who have that in their back pocket that they can pull out of, you know.
Well, I was wondering who your heroes were, who you listened to, who played drums. I mean, you're old enough to know Gene Krupa and Buddy Rich.
Buddy Rich for sure, right? I mean, and Gene Krupa, they're all great. I like all the old greats, you know.
And you can hold your own, I imagine.
Yeah, I'm a school drummer. I was a percussion major for a few years and dropped out and went on the road with a rock band. But I actually got a scholarship for snare drumming.
So did the family know that you could sing, or was that a shock to them?
No, you know, they kind of encouraged me to sing,
good.
You know, because we all sing. But and my mother used to always tell me what a unique voice I have. You know, just as a speaking voice, my voice is a little different. And so it carries over, of course, into my singing voice, too. So my parents were actors. Really? My dad's 93 and he has an actor's equity card still. Yeah. So, I mean, that's not how they raised us. They went to New York and tried to make it as actors for a few years. And then I guess World War II happened and things like that. So
you can make it anywhere.
That's a truth. So I kind of mirrored their careers and went to New York and I was there almost 20 years and we had both our sons are native New Yorkers. And after we had the second child, we moved back to Pittsburgh to raise the kids. I dropped out of the music business, my husband and I. My husband's a guitar player. I met him on the road in the first road band I was in.
Oh, wow.
So
sounds like you're having fun.
Yes.
It's, you know, if they would have said, wish for whatever you want, I wouldn't have wished for this because it's too much. It's too good. It's too fun. It's too.
So let's take it back with the biggest break in your career in drums before you left the music industry or to then have your band later on. Tell us like the biggest break, like where, how'd that happen? How did you connect with those people to get that, to get to be in the certain groups that you were a drummer in?
Yeah, it's interesting. New York back in the 70s and 80s, there was a starving artist community. And we didn't know anyone when we moved to New York and we ended up living in a building called the Music Building. And it was quite a place. And John Lennon's band Elephant's Memory was on the front of our floor and Bob Marley's keyboard player, Tyrone Downey lived next door to me. And you know, so everybody knew each other. Everybody went to and supported each other. We all went to each other's gigs. We were all playing CBGBs and all the big New York clubs and everything. So, you know, word would get around. You were just part of the scene. Sure. And there were rehearsal studios. One guy who played keyboards with us managed this big rehearsal studio. And he gave me a call. And that's how I ended up with the B-Girls, you know. Some of the other groups, people would just, Carol McDonald with Isis, that was a big band. He was on that Isis band. It was a horn band, all women. They were still, I played with the band she had after that band, but they were on the Midnight Special. Do you remember the Midnight
Special?
Sure,
sure. I love that show.
That's a big deal, right?
It was just a summer thing, and I wished it kept going.
Yeah, wasn't it great?
Yeah.
So,
I was actually on that show in the audience, not in the show, but one of the few.
We're waiting for your viral story, Dave, that you forgot.
Give me some clues. And
no, okay, we're not going to talk about
that. I got to search through the files.
It's cool that you play the drums, though.
Yeah, so would you say, so touring with the B-Girls, what are your experiences performing in pretty interesting crowds and stuff? What would you say?
Yeah, they opened for The Clash. Mick Jones from The Clash produced an EP for us in the studio, and I wrote for that band too. And they, you know, we've recorded one of my songs with that band that I wrote. And we were, that band was like, it was between us and the Go-Go's, who was going to get this record deal. And
Go-Go's.
We were totally unmanageable. and the Go-Go's had a manager. So, you know, sex, drugs, and rock and roll things kind of took a toll on that band. But the guitar player from the B-Girls passed away last year, Renee Shilhab. But the other two women who were in that band are still alive. One's in New York playing in a punk band now, and one's in India, and she's a guru of sorts, you know, and she's still doing music. We did a FaceTime a couple of weeks ago and it was great because I hadn't seen them in a while, you know, but they're still at it. But they were Cyndi Lauper and Madonna and that whole thing. This is before, you got to remember, before MTV and even cable TV, yeah, really. And so all the styles and all the art stuff that would originate in the East Village, you know, a lot of that style of the rock and roll and all the new styles and hairstyles and music styles and stuff like that. It all came out of the East Village, and I got to be part of that.
That's so awesome.
You're like into everything, eclectic, rock, blues, jazz. Which do you kind of lean toward?
I listen more to like funky kind of jazz, you know. But
Who's your favorite?
Right now, I'm listening a lot to Snarky Puppy and Lettuce. They both have amazing drummers, okay? And the music's good. I listen to Oz Noy. Do you know him? Guitar player? Ooh, no. You got to check him
out. I know Eric Clapton.
Oh, yeah. Well, Eric Clapton, you know, my husband and I have... We've made trips to see him play.
Yeah.
To see his concerts. Yeah.
So Jeff kind Beck, of people, what you made know, you get I, back? And so you said you left the music industry when you got married. When did you get back and form the band that's today? How did that happen? Yeah.
That happened a few years ago. And it just so happened that Dean Sargent and Mike Hennigan, my producers, are in my band now. All right. So, Dean produced my first solo album 35 years ago in New York City. He was the first called New York City recording engineer. So he worked on a lot of big projects and stuff. And you know, I've benefited from that. You know, you don't get 40, 50 years experience when you're 20, right? So and he's been writing, and both these guys, they sing and they write also. So between all of us, we have like probably 200 years of experience, and it shows on this album. It's really well produced. It's not overproduced. Everything we accomplished, all the goals that we set out to do, because I started to do this album. I told my husband I started writing again. So I said, I want to do an album. And so our grandkids will know the grandma and grandpa were cool once, you know. Yeah. So it started as a legacy thing. And Dean said, let's just let the music speak for itself, and just one thing led to another, and it's just too good not to go after it again. So we're having a ball. I'm enjoying the process.
You know, every artist says that at some point in their career, it kind of takes a little lull. I mean, Sinatra was concerned when the Beatles took off and stuff like that. Oh. Did that ever happen to you guys?
Oh, yeah. And not so far long ago. I mean, the music business is a whole different price today than it was back then. I mean, when I recorded my first album, we did it on, you know, that 2-inch tape. So the whole digital thing is like a whole new.
But things come around. It's like everyone who was concerned, you know, 30, 40 years ago is now really popular. We got old guys doing concerts that sell out crowds.
Well, that we're very much in that vein of a classic kind of rock and with jazz and blues and a lot of blues influences, you know. Real people playing real instruments. Right. They're not something that comes out of a computer, you know.
Exactly. Yeah.
But that's, you know, pop music's like that. I'm sorry, Neil.
When you talk Pittsburgh, okay, Pittsburgh rock, and how the tradition of what the music is in Pittsburgh. What do you think of that? You know, after you had your success in New York, and that's forming the band again, bringing all this back, and then to see the just Pittsburgh fans in general and how they're liking this whole reinvention of what you guys are doing, coming back together to do this. Tell us like the whole history of Pittsburgh rock and understanding how it just really fits well for what you're trying to do now.
Well, you know, Pittsburgh is an interesting city. It's in between, you know. It's not south, it's not north, it's not big city, it's not small city. We're like the three bears. We're just right. We're not too big, not too small. It's just right. And so many wonderful musicians in Pittsburgh. I mean, we have world-class jazz musicians here, I got to tell you. I've traveled, my husband and I have traveled, everywhere we go, we seek out the jazz clubs and we look for the best musicians, you know, and the best music. And nobody rivals our and I'm talking New York City and LA, all the places. Our guys can play anywhere. They're world-class. And we also have rock and roll, you know, so we have all kinds of music here. I mean, the Symphony Orchestra wins Grammys. Yes. And
the culture's jazz. Amazing. And you can't believe it, as a rocker, you're now being cultured, right? You wouldn't think of 20 years ago, culture, and now rock is becoming that, right? Where, you know, that you can get and perform in places that you wouldn't have performed 20 years ago.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's not a fad, is it?
Right.
So Pittsburgh's great, you know. We have all kinds of and they do the whole gamut of rock and roll here, from the heavy metal, biker heavy metal, whatever kinds of metal there, they have all kinds of heavy metal, right?
Who knows? And you like it all?
If it's done well, I like it. To me, music is a kind of thing where when it's right, when it's good, it transcends genre, you know?
Yeah,
It hits you in a spiritual place, in your heart, you know, you feel it no matter what. So when it's good, you know?
Yeah.
And I'm open to all of it. I'm not really a snob that way, musically. Right.
You know, so tell me about the album. What should we expect? And I love the title too, right? That's got to make you excited, right?
Queen of Pittsburgh.
Yeah, that I love it.
Well, I'm not saying, just so you, nobody's heard the song yet, so they don't know. And this is my producer Dean's idea, Dean Sorge. It's his
title.
Don't
be humble now.
It's his, I blame him. I'm not saying I'm the Queen of Pittsburgh. What the song says is, I'm not going to stop kicking ass until they make me the Queen of Pittsburgh. So that's kind of,
I like it.
Yeah. Oh, wait till you hear it. My husband and our son, James, our youngest boy, is a musician, and they do a father-son guitar solo section in that song that kills. It's really good. And that's another thing about this album that was so much fun for me. I got to have my son on it. Of course, my husband's on it. And two of my sisters sing background vocals, and my girlfriend Nicole Bell, sang background vocals on it too. So I got to have, so every time I hear it, it brings a smile to my face because I hear my family on there, you know.
So I'm racking my brain trying to figure out what Neil is talking about going viral. The only story I could think of, Neil, are you talking about Michael Jackson? I told a story where I was good friends with the godfather of gospel, Andre Crouch. Yeah. And he used to hang out with Billy Preston and Michael Jackson and stuff like that. Wow. And one time, I talked him into doing a Facebook page. I became his administrator. And I went from like 3 people to 200,000. And all of a sudden, there was a news article about Andre and Michael Jackson. And I won't get into it, but it went viral because I was Andre's Facebook administrator, and he doesn't like to talk to people, but they were talking to me. And, you know, according to Dave Nassani, Andre Crouch's Facebook,
that's not it. It was music. I'll go with that one.
All right. Well, anyway, today, if you Google my name and Michael Jackson's name, it goes on for pages and pages.
Maybe that's where I misunderstood the story, but that's probably there's the viral one. But we'll take it, Dave. All right, we'll take it. Your name's viral. All right, so, but it also is a caregiver. So ask the caregiver question to Ted.
Well, I understand your father is 90 what? 92, 93? 93, God bless him. Is he in good health?
Yes.
Good for you. Yeah. My wife, when she was 58, had a stroke. She lost her speech, became paralyzed on one side. And I instantly had to become her caregiver overnight. And, you know, I wasn't prepared for it, wasn't ready for it. And a couple of years was the grief process. It was hell, you know.
Oh, yeah.
But we hung in there, and we stuck at it, and she became her old self again. Our love was rekindled, and so I discovered there's other caregivers out there who are suffering, and and feeling lost and alone. Did you know 30% of caregivers actually die before their loved ones do?
No kidding.
A tough, tough job.
It is.
So I became Dave, the caregiver's caregiver. I have a caregiverdave.com website to help caregivers hang in there. I like to say that, you know, if you're not a caregiver today, just wait. You're either going to become one or you're going to need one. And now is the time to learn how to be a caregiver, not after tragedy strikes like me. So my question to you is, have you had any caregiving experience yet? Has it touched your life somehow?
Well, yes, with my mother, you know, the last few years of her life, as she declined, you know, my husband and I were the retired ones. So we were on call, you know, that phone would ring, we'd do a bat turn and my dad would say, I need your help. And bang, we'd have to, we'd run out and help him with my mother. And we took her to all her appointments and her radiation treatments when we went through that. And, you know, all her doctor's appointments and, you know, my dad was a, he really.
Did you see any signs of burnout in your dad, not taking care of himself, putting his needs first?
He, you know, he's tough. They're tough. My parents were tough. So, I mean, he, of course, he's 93 now. He lives with my baby sister, who's a, who happens to be a pharmacist, and her husband has, Dave has Parkinson's. So he's home.
And, so she is the caregiver in the family.
So she is. Yeah. So we, you know, but it's nice having this many siblings. We can all help out a little. So, you know.
Well, if they ever look like they're burning out, send them to caregiverdave.com. We'll straighten them out.
Okay, thanks.
Now, Teddy, best place we can find your music, where can we go?
You can go to my website, which is www.teddybrunetti.com. And that's T-E-D-I-B-R-U-N-E-T-T-I. You can also find me on Facebook and Instagram. And I love keeping in touch with my social media friends. And I have a YouTube, official YouTube channel, and Evil Woman, the single that I have out from the album, has a wonderful video on YouTube. I checked today and we have 8,300 views already. And that's, it's really hard to get views when you only have one item out there, you know, people want content.
Yeah, but that's good. So you definitely are providing a different type of music, putting the rock with the jazz. And I'm sure that you'll be performing a lot when things start opening up more, or you're going to have to recruit some other people. You know how it works is if you're going to do Pittsburgh and some of your people are other places, you'll have to put other people together to help you perform some big stuff, because I see some big things coming. And it's awesome what you're doing. The B-Girls, is that again, in a way, like one of those indie bands that people, there's a huge following? And because I was Googling some of that while we were talking.
Interesting. I mean, it was amazing that we didn't sign with anybody, but you know, that was back in the day, you know, the record companies wanted to own you, and they just never offered the right deal, and we didn't. And the leader of the band, those girls were from Toronto.
Yeah, so you were
women
kind of
now. Awesome. I mean, we're all like grandmothers now.
I looked at the picture of the album cover. Were you on any of the album covers or not?
I'm their second drummer, so I don't know. There's a few albums out, so I'm on one of them, I think.
Okay.
But,
Awesome. I just think it's cool because it's just, again, it's the thing that you think about specifically, that experience and how, you know, indie bands from back in the day have such a following still because of how music's able to be heard in so many ways. So, but I think this is a really big thing you're trying to do with the whole jazz and rock. And I think that it fits perfectly for Pittsburgh, but hopefully you guys will be touring all over the place once COVID's finally gone and you can start traveling and doing this.
Even LA.
In LA,
come to LA
and see Dave. All right. We appreciate it. Thanks, Teddy.
Oh, you guys are great. Thank you so much for having me today.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Great. All right, guys. Bye-bye. All right, take care. That was the Caregiver Dave Celebrity Segment. Take care.